Because of listeners like you, Preborn has helped to rescue over 67,000 babies. Your $28 to sponsor one ultrasound doubled a baby's chance at life. Your tax-deductible gift saves lives. Please join us in this mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. It is Monday, October 20th, and the headline is, "They did it. America doesn't have a king." And if you're wondering why the success of these, you know, outrageous liberals, most of them probably from, you know, the villages in Florida that, you know, moved the other way, and so they're totally leftist and a little bit crazy, but that was about, you know, the age demographic, and they did a lot of jazz hands, you know, kind of off Broadway motions, and, you know, had some really interesting dance moves. I'll just say that for the boomers. If you're wondering, you know, what was going on, well, they don't really know, because they all came out to protest on what was called No King's Day over the weekend. And newsflash, America already doesn't have a king. So they dubbed this a phenomenal success, because if you protest something that you already have won and then you call it a success, did you really make a difference? Well, some of them tend to think so, and some of them aren't really thinking at all. And as I was pulling some of these clips last night from an interview, from interviews by this Instagram guy, and he goes by the account Surge Philly. So this was apparently in Philadelphia, but Surge Philly. And he was like this young guy, you know, man on the street, going out actually interviewing these people to say, okay, what exactly is this protest? Why are you protesting? We know you don't want a king. America doesn't already have one, but nobody really knew what was going on. And some of these were just, they just get more and more insane. And I have to play a couple for you, because remember that the founders understood and they protected all of our rights, including the right to be stupid. This is cut number one.
So what brings you out today?
No King's Day.
And why specifically are you out supporting No King's Day?
I think protest is important.
Why are you protesting?
How much time do you have?
A couple minutes. And what's the main reason you're out here protesting President Trump?
I agree with a lot of the decisions that are being made.
Is there any decision in particular you disagree with?
I would start with, I don't even think it's appropriate for me to have this interview.
Yeah, she's just now figuring that out a few minutes in. But it just gets worse. So then Sugar Philly interviewed the Monarch Lady, and this was a lady who was dressed like a butterfly and was, you know, just really amazing. And she held up a sign that said, "No faux monarchs, only butterflies should be monarchs." So, you know, that was real insightful. Listen to what she had to say.
What has President Trump done to make him a monarch?
He started to take control and do illegal things and that are not within his power. So that's pretty much what makes a person a monarch. They take complete control even though they shouldn't have it.
What illegal things has he done?
Come here. What illegal things? Everything that he has done except for get elected. Every single thing since he's gotten into office.
So deporting illegal immigrants, is that illegal?
Deporting illegal immigrants? If they're here peacefully, yes.
If they're illegally here, though, if they came illegally?
They came here illegally? I believe we're a country that stands for Lady Liberty. It said, give me your tired, your give me everybody you can possibly bring into the United States, and it doesn't say ship them back out. It says welcome.
Awesome. Any other issues, any issues in particular that you really disagree with Trump on?
No, because you're just baiting me. Have a nice day.
This lady, she couldn't
even... I was just asking.
She couldn't even quote what was on the Statue of Liberty. Leave me your tired, your, you know, like, anybody who wants to come in. I mean, she couldn't even quote the poem, much less the law. But, you know, dressed up as a butterfly, that'll really, really sell it. All right, one more. And this guy, he's got to have been on something. I mean, but this one, I was just laughing. And so, warning to all of you who are driving on your way to work, that you might start laughing hysterically at this one. And so just be prepared. So this is a man. Well, we will just play it. This is cut three.
What's the main reason you're out here today? What do you say?
I feel like the current Trump administration that we are paying taxes for, that our taxes are not going in the direction that our taxes should be used for, such as health care, home care for elderly people, other such things as like helpful ideas that should be used. Our taxpayer dollars should not be used for creating wars or
paying. And then Trump, what about the wars that Trump has stopped?
Which one was that?
Well, he stopped the war in Palestine, right?
No, he did not. That has been going on for millions of years and multiple entities have been involved. It's just the last thing. You can't just come in. What's it called? Cherry picking? It's called in a U.S. game when you steal the goal, but the whole team made it, but you just grabbed it and shoved it in the thing. Trump did not at all make any peace deals with anyone. All Trump has done is make money for himself, his family, and his grift.
Guys, these are actual potential voters in the U.S. I mean, my favorite part of that one was how the Palestinian war has been going on for millions of years. I think that'll come as a shock to both sides. But these are the type of, you know, just absolutely really politically engaged individuals, policymakers, you know, who are out there this weekend protesting. But, oh, man. And those were some of the best. There are more. Believe me, it was hard to pare down. But props to Surge Philly for getting some of those gems. But let's welcome in Orrin McIntyre, who is a host at The Blaze, for more. So, Orrin, you know, we got to give it to him. Like, they won. We have no king. I mean, you know, their protest was successful.
Yeah, I mean, we already had one of these, and obviously it's a joke the whole time. In a lot of ways, it's kind of boomers reliving their youth one last time, one more drum circle, one more song, one more chant, that kind of stuff. But, you know, behind all the ridiculous protests, there is a very serious element of this. That, of course, the, you know, non-threatening, the peaceful, the goofy, they're all out from these kind of protests. But behind that, remember that the left is training up Antifa. There is a much more radical, especially youthful element of the left that is, you know, hidden behind this. And they're still building, you know, we saw, I don't know if you saw the footage, there was a Hispanic woman who is apparently a school teacher. And she was, reenacting Charlie Kirk being shot. She was threatening people, by making a gun sign to her neck. So, you know, that radical element is still there in these protests.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, while we can make fun, and we should, of, you know, some of the more ridiculous individuals, I mean, the left is definitely still promoting violence. There's a lot of people that are still just horrendously, inappropriately celebrating Charlie Kirk's assassination. And the BBC headline asked, I think, the salient question. The headline said, after No King's protests, where does Democratic opposition go next? And so, I mean, these demonstrations actually drew an estimated crowd of millions across the U.S. to protest. You know, a lot of people didn't know what, but they were protesting. At least they knew they were protesting Donald Trump and his policies, even though they didn't even know, a lot of them didn't know what those policies were. But this does signal the more dangerous element, especially when you get into Antifa, and when these types of protests and this type of ideology ends up fomenting more political violence. But Orrin, where does Democratic opposition go next when you're seeing a lot of these policies? If, you know, all of these people actually wanted to look into it, the policies are working.
Yeah, the left doesn't really know what to do with itself at this point. As you say, many people might be unsure about where the country is going. We've seen Donald Trump's approval dip into somewhere in the mid-40s. But the only people less popular are the Democrats themselves, who are already somewhere in the low 30s. Even though there's some kind of, you know, unease about where the country might be, the Democratic Party is just not a viable option for most people, which has to be incredibly frustrating for them. Remember when they lost the last election, it was, we need a new Joe Rogan. We can't figure out how to win over men. You know, all these different soul-searching things. And the Democrats haven't resolved any of those issues. They started to lose ground with Hispanics, which were kind of a critical part of their coalition. The idea that ultimately they would win through demographics was a big part of them pushing some of that great replacement immigration. And ultimately that strategy has failed as well. So this is why I think you see them going into more radical positions and even violence, because you can't win elections on the strategies that the Democrats have been advancing.
Yeah. And, you know, and yet, if we believe the polls, which, you know, I think the last several presidential elections have taught us that we really can't. But if you believe the polls there, and obviously we're not factoring in whether or not the Supreme Court case on redistricting will favor districts that are actually drawn without consideration of race, and if that will impact the midterms or then, you know, moving into 2028. But absent that potential, some of the polls are suggesting that Democrats are still gaining popularity in terms of just being a contrast to the conservative right. As we are looking at this now, again, you know, the redistricting case could radically shift everything in terms of the House. But when we look at something like the Senate, when we look at, you know, overall elections in the country, it's still a pretty divided country. And that suggests, I mean, it's not as simple as just, well, the, you know, uneducated voter, or, you know, as Rush Limbaugh used to call them, the useful idiots, you know, the people that we would suggest are not rationally looking at policy. They have a lot of different priorities, obviously. But, you know, a lot of these people who are at these protests are simply just opposing Donald Trump. Does that actually translate into this division in terms of the vote in your mind heading into very shortly midterm season and the election next November?
Well, you know, the incumbent is always going to be losing some votes, some support in midterms. That's a classic political cycle. And that's, of course, going to play into things. A lot of the stuff that the Trump administration wanted to do was very popular with its base, and I think largely popular with the American people, but it's also been stunted. You know, they've been fighting tooth and nail to try to get the deportations and other things on the way. You know, they've tried to reshore manufacturing with things like tariffs, which has been kind of a mixed bag. And so the Democrats are going to try to pry those issues open. They're going to try to push on them. And once again, you know, being the incumbent means you're always going to lose some seats. I think ultimately the Democrats just don't have a coherent message, however. We know that they hate Donald Trump, and that's going to be good enough for the guy sitting in the White House for a little while, but they don't have a vision of what America should be doing. They don't have a vision of where it should be going, and I think that's going to ultimately hurt them.
Yeah. Yeah. And we can only hope. And, you know, there are a lot of us like you and I, Orrin, that would, you know, look at the policies and say, you know, obviously, if you are a rational person, you're looking at reality. You're looking at what is the overarching good as an objective measurement. Then obviously, you know, there are policies that are good and there are policies that are actually bad or evil. And we've certainly seen that in previous administrations and that contrast. But the interesting thing is that so many people are not actually looking at the world rationally. They're not even starting with reality. I saw a lot of memes that said, well, from the party that I can't tell you what a man or a woman is. How should we expect them to say what a king or a no king is? I mean, these are people that literally want to harness language and twist it to their preferred definitions and don't live in reality. So we'll continue to talk about this, but at least we can laugh at some of them because, you know, we all need to start with that at least on a Monday morning. But Orrin McIntyre, really appreciate it. We'll be back with more. We're living in a time when truth is under attack. Lies are easy to tell, easy to spread, and easy to believe. But truth? Truth is costly. And nowhere is the cost greater than for mothers in crisis. When a woman is told abortion is her only option, silence and lies surround her. But when she walks into a preborn network clinic, she's met with compassion, support, and the truth about the growing life inside her. That moment of truth happens through a free ultrasound, and it's a game changer. When a mother sees her baby and hears that heartbeat, it literally doubles the chance she will choose life. Preborn Network clinics are on the front lines, meeting women in their darkest hour, loving them, helping them choose life, and sharing the truth. Friend, this is not the time to be silent. It is the time for courage, for truth, and for life. Just $28 provides one ultrasound and the opportunity for a mother to see her baby to help her choose truth and choose life. Please donate today. Call #250 and say baby. That's #250 baby or give online at preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Back? Well, at least some are returning to reality potentially. And this is actually very good news coming from our own American Family News. The headline is, "The numbers show it's no longer cool to be trans." So after increasing over the last decade and a half, a study from the Center for Heterodox Social Science found that starting in 2023, the percentage of American college students who identify as transgender or queer has fallen almost in half, from almost 7% to less than 4%. So Peter LaBarbera, thank you, Adam is correcting me. I appreciate that. Of the Center for Morality and AmericansForTruth.com says by 2023, the rise in trans identification was because of what he calls a social contagion. It was cool to say you're trans, but then reality set in. Isn't that interesting that your worldview and the way that you view things, if it is premised on truth and reality, then it will flow with reality and you won't see any of those inconsistencies or those incongruities. But as Francis Schaeffer and other apologists have written for, you know, for decades, and this goes, you know, all the way back to obviously the beginning of the person of truth, which we know is Jesus Christ, and how God himself is the author of truth. And so anything that is consistent with God and his character will be consistent with reality. Anything that is not will be inconsistent. But as Francis Schaeffer says, if your worldview is premised on something false, then eventually you will butt up against reality. And at that moment, you will either have to ignore reality and have that leap of false faith and say, I'm ignoring reality, I'm choosing my worldview that I now know is false, or at that point, you will change your view and say, oh, this is where that inconsistency is, so I guess my worldview fails. An intellectually honest person will be looking for those incongruities so that we have a cohesive worldview. And for some, at least, this is actually so sad and tragic for the trans movement, that some of these young people who have been so caught up in this ideology of it's cool to identify as, you know, anything other than the sex that is God-given and immutable to our humanity, made in the image of God, and that God himself gives us those characteristics and that biology. It's cool to identify as anything else. Some of those consequences have had and will have lasting, permanent consequences for people who bought into this lie. And not every lie will have permanent consequences, but unfortunately, for a lot of these people who have identified as trans, have taken hormones or done even more drastic things, it will have lasting effects. But at least, and as Peter says, that sometime around 2023, the movement crossed some invisible line and the public started refusing to play along. He says it's a road just too far from most Americans. And so there was such a tremendous pushback against the trans agenda. So this is a really good thing. And let's welcome in Alex McFarland, who is an author, a Christian apologist, and of course, a co-host of our very own Exploring the Word right here on American Family Radio Network. And so, Alex, it's so great to have you again. And, you know, this is such a great thing. And I think that we need to meet this moment as Christians with compassion, with truth, and also with praise to the Lord that this statistic is showing that a lot of people are rejecting what has been the lie of the age for the last, you know, decade plus.
Yeah, Jenna, I'm so glad you're addressing this issue because a big issue that's been in the news for a while is regret among those that attempt to transition. But I think if the Lord mercifully gives us some sanity back into our nation, someday people are going to look back really with horror and amazement at the persons in leadership, like elected officials, teachers, celebrity commentators, even some medical professionals that encouraged people to try and transition, which causes so much. I mean, already people have, you know, volatile emotions and just, you know, a whole spectrum of feelings and even delusions about themselves. And then to encourage people towards life-altering surgeries and really carcinogenic administrations of hormones. And we did this to children. I mean, I think people are going to look back in horror at the adults in positions of leadership that encouraged such destruction in the lives and, frankly, the souls of people. The transgender movement, probably 5 years ago, Jen, I was on an interview, a secular media group, and I said, you know, I hate to say this, but it's really a fad. Because, look, emotional instability in teenagers and children, you know, late childhood, pre-adolescence, there are mood swings, impulsive behavior, you know, difficulty controlling emotions. And so it's kind of chic or cool or hip or very different to say that you're same-sex attracted or you're, you know, gender fluid or you're androgynous or, you know, non-binary. I mean, and I said, it's a fad. And I mean, oh my goodness, Jenna, I got hate mail. But it really is a fad. Sadly, though, this has been a fad that's been subsidized and even encouraged by the state.
Yeah, yeah. And that's where I think the lawsuits against this really need to be as effective as possible for holding accountable the people who should have known better and who did know better and who are vested with the obligation, the duty, and the responsibility to protect against actual objective harm. And we can still define harm objectively. It's not, mm-hmm. you know, words. It's not being offended. But, you know, like the left would say, but these hormones that have affected kids and these surgeries that have permanently mutilated their bodies, people need to be held accountable for this because there is going to be so many people that are left in the wake of this that are so damaged that they are going to, the only hope that they have will be in the finished work of Christ and to say that, you know, regardless of that damage, you still have a wonderful future for your life. And as mm-hmm. far as God is concerned, there's nothing that can separate you from him when you receive that free gift of salvation. There is hope and there is truth in the light of Christ, and that we can and should give that message. But that does not mean that we should not also want people, especially the doctors that were part of this and the state that passed all of this legislation that allowed this to be held accountable. And that is a Christian principle as well.
Indeed. I did a PowerPoint presentation for one of the AFA board retreats that I spoke at. I think it was in 23. So this was spring of 23, but this data is not that old, a couple of years old. But I documented, Jenna, American publications, Psychology Today, Newsweek magazine, and some European publications that began the research 2 years ago, began to come out about transgender regret rates. And not only that, just emotional, and I mean, people sort of wake up and it's almost like this, you know, oh my gosh, what have I done to my body? But then there was a journal, the Epidemiologic Review, which is a journal of cancer and just disease origins. Epidemiology, cancer in transgender people, evidence and methodological considerations. And it said, and I'm quoting, the current literature indicates transgender people face a disproportional burden of adverse health outcomes. Okay. In other words, disproportionately high amount of adverse health outcomes. Now, you don't hear this on The View, and you don't hear this in the pop media, but I went to, in my home state of North Carolina, I interviewed an oncology surgeon and an oncology nurse, and they said, please, please don't use our name or the hospital because, you know, their jobs are on the line. I mean, this is so sad, folks, that the medical establishment, not all, but in some quarters of the medical establishment, the people that we really trust for our healthcare have really been bludgeoned into going along with the narrative. But this oncology surgeon that I interviewed and an oncology nurse, they documented 17 types of cancers: stomach, glioblastomas, lung cancer, leukemia, colon cancers, gastrointestinal cancers, soft tissue sarcomas, in other words, these muscle tumors. And anyway, I've got this list of 17 types of cancers, including numerous cancers in the reproductive organs of both male or female that transition. And this is what I was told. And if I name the hospital, everybody listening will know, a very famous hospital. They said to transition is to give yourself cancer. Very likely. Wow. Yeah, because males taking just these ridiculously large amounts of estrogen. Females, although female to male transitioning is rarer. And I'm just going to say this as a pastor and minister. I think men are more susceptible just to perverse sins. I know we're all sinners, but especially sexual deviancy. It seems like men are more prone to just really falling off the cliff into just deviant, ungodly behaviors. But there are women and that try to transition. Many people listening might remember Chloe Cole, who was like 14 and I think was subjected to a double mastectomy. And now that she's a young adult woman, is, you know, suing or has sued some of the entities that were participants in really the bodily mutilation that she underwent. And here's the thing, Jenna. I mean, we don't let, I mean, if you're, you know, under 18 or 21, you can't buy a car. You don't get a driver's license. There are some things, some decisions that we don't let minors make because they're not mature enough to understand the implications of what they're doing. And yet we've got government-run schools and counselors urging children to do things that will prevent them from having a normal life, getting married, having children. I mean, this is irresponsibility at the highest level, and we're not even yet talking about the spiritual implications. So I'm going to say it, and I will, you know, happily be on record saying this, not only as an apologist, but a theologian, Jenna. Transgender ideology is demonic. It is from Satan. John 10:10, the Word of God says that Satan comes to steal, kill, and destroy. And I believe that the whole LGBTQ trans plus plus narrative is demonic, and it's destroying the bodies of people, if not the souls as well.
Absolutely. I agree with you on that 100%. And lies, things that separate us from the truth and give us a God substitute, some other identity other than our identity in Christ, is always from the devil. That's how we know it is demonic and it is from the devil. And this is one of the worst in terms of that permanent harm, because there are other lies and other ways that you can go about sin that don't have as lasting or as drastic of harm. But we've seen, you know, even with the rise of the sexual revolution and all of the sexually transmitted diseases and, you know, some of those things that are permanent as well. I mean, there are actual consequences to a lifestyle or choices of sin. There are consequences, you know, of course, even outside of sexual perversion, a lot of sin has consequences. Some isn't as permanent. Thankfully, you know, there can, and there always is, redemption in Christ. But thankfully, there are some where God doesn't always allow us to suffer the full effect and consequence of that sin. But Alex, you're so right that this is also a spiritual moment, because as these people, these young people who have been convinced of this lie are now recognizing reality. And I've been talking about this, you know, for the last year or so on this program especially. I think that this is a very critical moment where the church has to meet this moment, not with farming out these cases and these people and their devastation over this belief in this lie out to the so-called professionals, right? Like the, this isn't one that I as a pastor, you know, can really handle. Let's send you to, you know, a therapist. No, we need to, as Christians, be equipped to meet this moment with the truth. And I'm not saying that, you know, that professional counseling isn't also a good thing, but churches need to not rely on the so-called professionals to do the job of the church, which is meeting the moment and speaking the truth into the lives of these young people. And we need to be prepared to meet that moment. How best would you encourage pastors and also people who, you know, I mean, these may be people in our neighborhoods, in our own communities that we come across, that as Christians, we need to be equipped to engage that and have the answers for the hope that is in us that we can then share with people to allow them to come into a saving knowledge of truth, even in the midst of this suffering.
Great. Because, you know, our surveys show, you know, Jenna, we have 7 summer youth camps we've done for 20 years, and we have roughly 1,200 teenagers in our summer biblical worldview camps. And we've done a lot of surveys, and the number one voices that young people listen to regarding life, truth, God, you know, the priorities of life are mom and dad. Mom and dad, take heart. You have far more entree into your child's mind than you may even realize. And then there are grandparents, but always in the top three of voices. And we've polled 250,000 teenagers in 20 years, Jenna. And we ask you, to whom would you go for, you know, important information about, you know, life and God? Well, it's always either a pastor, youth pastor, Sunday school teacher, or trusted adult, and maybe a teacher. But I would encourage pastors, first of all, preach about such things from the pulpit. The Barna Research Group says that 78% of parishioners want their clergy to talk about moral, social, and yes, political issues from the pulpit. But only about 3 to 9% of pastors do. And I think a lot of pastors, look, I've pastored 2 churches and I've spoken in more than 2,000. But I think a lot of pastors assume that, it's just forbidden to talk about moral, social, political things from the pulpit on Sunday morning at 11 a.m. Pastor, almost 8 out of 10 of your members want you to. And children and teens, they do listen to the authoritative voices of their spiritual leaders. They really do. I think in church, we need to constantly affirm marriage and family and our identity, that we are fearfully and wonderfully made. And Jenna, a few moments ago, you were talking about the word immutable. And our constitution and government, believes there are immutable truths. Where we were born, when we were born, and yes, the gender. And we need to tell from toddlerhood up, God made you a little boy, and that's wonderful. God made you a little girl, and you'll become a woman, and you'll become a man, and your gender is part of who you are that God, in His wisdom, decided. And, Jenna, I'll say this about the demonic nature of the desire to switch one's gender or the insistence that gender is fluid. See, it's one thing to say, God, you can't tell me how to behave. The Bible says, thou shalt not lie, thou shalt not steal. God, you don't have the right to tell me how to behave. But transgenderism is basically shaking one's fist and saying, God, you can't even define who or what I am. And that is satanic.
Mm. So well said. And we have to take a break here, Alex, but so much more we could talk about this topic with you. And we need to continue to talk about this topic. This is why, for regular listeners, you've heard me repeatedly talk about this topic, because we need to meet this moment and be equipped to have the answers of truth and to explain how and why God made us in His image with those immutable characteristics. It is not something that we have the power to change. And as people are thankfully coming into that understanding of reality, they're rejecting those lies, then we need to then encourage them in the truth and to say there is hope in the finished work of Christ. So, Alex McFarland, always so great to have you on the program. We'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. Well, there is a wonderful essay that you absolutely have to read, and it is called The Great Feminization by Helen Andrews, and I'm really hoping that we will have her on the program soon. But this is an essay that has sparked a lot of debate because the essay captured the imagination enough to spark widespread discussion and debate among a lot of intellectuals who are now talking about this, because the essay that is in Compact Magazine, and if you go to Compact Magazine online or you just Google The Great Feminization, you'll be able to read this topic. But basically, from what Compact Magazine says, is this: everything you think of as wokeness involves prioritizing the feminine over the masculine. And so this is her great thesis, right? Everything you think of as wokeness involves prioritizing the feminine over the masculine. Empathy over rationality, safety over risk, cohesion over competition. Other writers who have proposed their own versions of the great feminization thesis, such as Noah Carle or Bo Weingard or Corey Clark, or others who looked at feminization's effect on academia, offer survey data showing sex differences in political values. One survey, for example, found that 71% of men said protecting free speech was more important than preserving a cohesive society, and 59% of women said the opposite. The most relevant differences are not about individuals, but about groups. In my experience as the writer, Helen Andrews, individuals are unique and you come across outliers who defy stereotypes every day. But groups of men and women display consistent differences, which makes sense if you think about it statistically. I, Jenna, would also add, if you think about it biblically, obviously there are differences as groups between men and women, and there are supposed to be. But Helen goes on to write, a random woman might be taller than a random man, but a group of 10 random women is very unlikely to have an average height greater than that of a group of 10 men. The larger the group of people, the more likely it is to conform to statistical averages. Female group dynamics favor consensus and cooperation. Men order each other around, but women can only suggest and persuade. Any criticism or negative sentiment, if it absolutely must be expressed, needs to be buried in layers of compliments. The outcome of a discussion is less important than the fact a discussion was held and everyone participated in it. And this may explain the rise of the ridiculous corporate culture right now as well, right? Because when women entered the workforce, then instead of just getting to the bottom line and actually executing and being efficient and valuing some of those metrics, then, you know, the EQ of corporate culture began to dominate. And we had to, you know, how do you feel at work? And let's everybody talk about our lives in a group therapy session for the first 20 minutes on a Zoom call that could have been an email, right? A lot of this rise of corporate culture, and especially with human resources, and not to say that all of it is necessarily bad, but a lot of this can be attributed to the rise of women in the workforce, right? So it's all very fascinating. But anyway, she goes on to say that the most important sex difference in group dynamics is attitude to conflict. In short, men wage conflict openly while women covertly undermine or ostracize their enemies. So this is a really fascinating conversation overall, and there are so many different directions that we could go with this, and we only have about another 8 minutes in this program, and I may do a much longer conversation about, you know, various aspects of this article, because you really need to read the whole thing. But the great feminization, in my view, and one of the great takeaways from this article was how much the attitude of the generalized statistical female perspective has invaded traditional masculinity. Men are not just becoming women in the sense that, you know, I was talking about in the last segment with Alex McFarland, in terms of a trans identity and actually men saying that they identify as women. But even men who want to be husbands and fathers and men and, you know, leaders of their household are displaying very feminine characteristics. And this absolutely has a correlation with what we have observed as wokeness in society, because when you eradicate the masculine presence, which can be defined, of course, as the provider, the leader, the warrior, the man who is solid, who has strength, and who is, you know, who's rock solid, who all of those characteristics that we can define as men who rush to conflict. I mean, if you look at D-Day, those are men who rushed, literally knowing that they were rushing to their deaths to engage in a conflict that that they would sacrifice their lives for. And women, by and large, and there are notable exceptions. I honestly think I am one of the women who is an exception to this, because I don't shy away from conflict at all. And in fact, one of the things that I've had to learn in my life is that not all conflict is worth it, right? And also that not everyone perceives engagement and debate in the same way, because I don't even see that necessarily as conflict. I like it. I engage in it, and it's fine. Where a lot of people, men included, perceive any disagreement or any sort of clash, even on a worldview ground, as a conflict, and conflict necessarily means discomfort to them, right? So obviously there are outliers, but overall, by and large, women don't prefer direct conflict. And when men who are the ones who are supposed to be the leaders and engage conflict for the protection not only of their families, but also of their churches and also of society at large. When we lose that ability to say we are willing to stand firm on the truth, even if it makes someone else uncomfortable, even if it means that we are disfavored or we lose friends, that's fine. Because I am willing to engage that battle because I stand for truth. We have lost that among the great feminization of the culture. And this is why so many of what we call the woke pastors, the woke leaders of society, they are acting in terms of conflict, basically feminine or feminized, because they are so scared to offend anybody that they are unwilling to meet the moment and to simply speak truth and to stand firm. Now, this doesn't mean, of course, that you need to bully, you need to be harsh. You know, we can obviously, you know, kind of soften the edges a little bit. And this is why it's not good for man to be alone, right? Like there needs to be that balance, and women are supposed to be a helpmeet for the man. And it does not mean that masculine does not require empathy, doesn't require gentleness, kindness, you know, all of that. Those types of fruits of the Spirit are for all human beings made in the image of God who want to display the characteristics of Christ. But notice that when the woke society is perverting this view of Christ and of what a Christian should be, it necessarily is removing the masculine element of Christianity, of standing firm for truth, and overemphasizes the more feminine characteristics and traits. And it feminizes, really. I mean, that's the personification of the woke Jesus, right? Is to overly feminize not only Christianity and the gospel, but to then reduce its power. And if you think about this and how this has impacted the church primarily, and then, of course, the church has consequences on society and then the family. The family then no longer has the warrior at the helm, but the overly feminized guys that are too afraid to kill spiders and go and make their wives do it, right? And it's this imbalance that then ultimately has an effect on politics and policy, because no longer do we have the warriors who are willing to go into battle for the truth, have that conflict. They don't care about offending if they are speaking truth. They are willing to be as the founders were, to say we are right and we are looking to God our creator for the rectitude of our intentions. Then they're shrinking back and just saying, well, you know, we have to build, you know, these coalitions and we have to dialogue. I mean, this is what Congress is doing all the time. And I'm frankly sick of it, because I want men back in society, Christian men, Christian pastors, Christian husbands and fathers and leaders and Christian statesmen to go out and be the warriors for truth instead of what we have seen as the great feminization. This is the problem with the woke overall. We're already out of time, but there's so much more I could say. This is the problem with woke, is the great feminization. So go read this article, Helen Andrews, in compactmag.com. It's titled The Great Feminization. We'll have to talk about more angles next time. And as always, you can reach me and my team, Jenna, at afr.net. Preborn's whole mission is to rescue babies from abortion and lead their families to Christ. Last year, Preborn's network of clinics saw 8,900 mothers come to Christ. Please join us in this life-saving mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.